Hello and welcome to Press TV's news analysis with me, Homa Lesgi. Chaos in the streets of London as demonstrators stage one of the biggest protests in the UK yet against the government's austerity measures. What is the March for the Alternative about and how will the government respond?
In London, police have clashed with protesters who are frustrated over spending cuts that could leave up to 500,000 people out of work. Tear gas was used to disperse protesters who set tyres ablaze. The March for the Alternative was organised by unions who say they're fed up with the public bearing the brunt of Downing Street's unwise financial decisions. 4,500 police are overlooking the march, and unions have deployed teams of stewards to ensure a peaceful rally. The unions say they want nothing to distract from their message that there are alternatives to spending cuts, alternatives such as fighting tax evasion by Britain's super rich and an overhaul of the banking system.
We've allowed companies such as Vodafone to avoid paying £6 billion in tax.
A sit-in has also been planned for Trafalgar Square, inspired by the massive public presence that won a revolution in Egypt's Tahrir Square.
After the main demonstration has finished, we will be occupying Trafalgar Square, first of all, in solidarity with the Egyptian, Tunisian and with the Libyan people who have been inspiring millions of people around the globe that people's power and revolution is possible. And the second thing is that we are going to say to Cameron and Clegg today that we will not go away, that we will stay until this government is brought to its knees and that we have defeated the cuts.
Finance Minister George Osborne delivered his annual budget on Wednesday, but he dropped the bombshell on Britain last year when he told the nation after an emergency budget and spending review that £81 billion would be sheared off Britain's record deficit in 5 years. To make that happen, civil servants would be getting a pay freeze and hundreds of thousands of public sector jobs could be eliminated, among other things. Britain's unemployment already stands at its highest level since 1994, and the worry is that some may never be welcomed back to the workforce for lack of job experience. Britain's decision to spend public funds on the ongoing war in Afghanistan and the latest assault in Libya have also fueled public anger towards the government.
Well, joining me now on the line from London is former London Mayor Ken Livingstone. Also joining us via satellite from London is journalist and author Phil Rees, and live in Irvine, Professor Paul Sheldon Foote with California State University. I'd like to welcome you all on this special news analysis program, and I'll start with London Ken Livingstone. What are the alternatives that people want?
Well, it's quite simple that we've had over the last 30 years economic policies which allow the rich to get richer and richer, companies to pay less and less tax, and the burden has all fallen on working class and middle class families. And now, after the banking crisis, which has suddenly landed our nation like many others with massive new debts, whilst the bankers now have gone back to their high salaries and their bonuses, we are seeing libraries cut, rent support cut, massive job losses, and there's a real damaging attack on what we understand as our British way of life. I think there's a lot of dishonesty in government. They lied to win the election. They said they would make no cuts in frontline services. Now they're pushing these through. And I think at the core, around Prime Minister David Cameron, and a small group of neoconservatives like Michael Gove, their objective really is to turn Britain into a small version of America, a much smaller state, much smaller public services, more casualties. And they are trying to hide this under the saying we've got to do all of this because of the cuts. But basically, we've already had David Cameron leading the charge to see the West intervening in Libya. And it was only last month that David Cameron was saying he wanted an alliance with America and France to constrain and perhaps even intervene in Iran. So I think we've got a virulently pro-American government.
But when you say, Ken, when you say a small...
The majority of the people.
Yeah, sorry for jumping in. When you say they want to turn the UK into a small version of America, could you elaborate on that for us?
Well, we've always had this problem that there's a layer of the politicians in Britain seem to have their primary loyalty to the United States of America, and often taking a similarly very strong line on the question of the Israel-Palestine situation, and not actually putting the interests of the British people first. And you see what happens. Tony Blair, who was the leading example of this, that really turned Britain into just a mercenary for America in their wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, has been rewarded with £20 million in terms of commissions and board placements, mainly from great American corporations, and also, you know, presiding over broadly pro-American policy in the Arab-Israeli conflict. So those who serve America's interests get well rewarded.
Well, the thing is, speaking of the alternatives that the unions have been calling there, they've been saying, for instance, what they've been proposing is new taxes for banks, and they're saying closing the loopholes that allow some firms to pay less tax instead of taking money from public services. In these alternatives that we are seeing, how feasible, though, do you think these kinds of proposals are for the government?
These are easily feasible because the big banks in Britain have just announced their profits, and we discovered that they're basically paying only 1% of their profits in tax. You know, I mean, it's almost no point of them being here. We aren't getting the sort of 30 or 40% tax we could have on profits. And tax avoidance has become Britain's biggest growth industry. Most rich people, like the people who own newspapers, the Murdochs and so on, pay virtually no tax at all. And so when we say the government is now trying to make £80 billion of cuts, but it's most probably £100 billion that rich people and corporations avoid or evade paying in tax. So if the government actually made certain everyone made their fair share a contribution, we wouldn't be in this position.
Well, Ken, before we leave you, because I know you don't have a lot of time to be with us, I'll just put this last question. Do you think that with the strategy that the government is taking, and that is the spending cuts, it is, however, going to save the UK economy from falling into a recession, or it's practically, is it going to help?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You see, the government's policies would work. It might be worth it. But the government brought these policies in last summer, and the result has been growth in our economy has dramatically slowed beyond what they expected, which means we're borrowing more than we expected. We're in danger of locking ourselves into the same sort of position as Ireland, of making massive cuts that prevent growth, and so you can't pay off the debt. There's a very real danger that Britain might spend the next 2 or 3 years effectively with minimal levels of growth and the debt piling up.
All right, that was Ken Livingston, former Mayor of London, joining us there on the line from London with his comments. Ken, thanks very much. I'd like to go live to London now to talk with Phil Rees. He's a journalist and author. Mr. Rees, thanks for being with us. Speaking of the strategy that we were just talking to Ken about, do you think that the strategy, though it is facing this opposition, is going to help the UK economy get back on track?
Ken is absolutely right. The strategy is actually only going to contribute to further recession. The way to get out of recession is actually to create things to counter the recession by putting investment in. So I think that the government is very much taking the wrong strategy, though it is a strategy that serves the interests of the rich, particularly the international financial sector, which in Britain has been extremely powerful in determining government policy. In fact, there's been a massive democratic deficit, and I think this is one of the reasons that people are on the streets now. They feel that all the major parties, ever since Tony Blair took over the Labour Party, have acted in the interests of the super rich and, in a way, the international global capitalists. And there's no option. You can't vote and get a different result. You've got the same kind of policies. So people feel disenfranchised. People feel that democracy does not offer them an alternative.
All right, let's go to hearing Ian Williams now is with us. He's a senior analyst with Foreign Policy in Focus, joining us on the line from New York. Ian, if you can hear me, speaking of the alternatives that people in the UK and unions have been speaking of, the bonuses they say that shouldn't be given to banks, and the fundamental changes, in their words, that should be made to the tax policies and the whole economic policies of the UK. This is also not just about the UK, but about, of course, the economy of Europe and the US as well, where you are. A lot of criticism about the way that banks have been bailed out and if it's going to help. But do you think these are alternatives that governments would accept, or even if they do, could be feasible?
We have to remember that it's not really a call for radical innovation. We're talking about the policies which were accepted across the Western world 30, 35 years ago, before Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher. We're talking about policies that governments intervene in the economy to stimulate demand and to stimulate investment. And what we've had for 30 years and what led to the recent financial disaster was the dogma that governments have no part in the economy and that the business of workers is to work for as little money as possible while bankers run off with the profits. And the fact that we've just come through a financial crisis of such magnitude, which has been very clearly and obviously caused by the unregulated neoliberal dogma, it's even more astonishing that governments like the British government feel that more of the same is what's necessary.
Well, Phil Rees, we were speaking to one analyst from the US earlier, and he was saying, why shouldn't the government in the UK propose a public work program and generate funds to create more jobs and to tackle major tax evasions instead of giving money to banks? But do you think, can it do that, and why isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think Professor Williams has raised the question of neoliberalism, effectively the ideology that came to prominence with President Reagan in 1980 in America, with Margaret Thatcher in Britain in 1979. And I think neoliberalism, which basically gives a free-for-all for global capitalism to just run riot or not be in any way restricted by governments, a belief that the market is the only true arbiter of right and wrong. I think that this ideology is now reaching a kind of crisis. I think the banking crisis showed that it encourages so much greed that it has a way of kind of destroying itself. So I think there's a very clear sort of ideological battle taking place now, that more and more people in Britain, the world over, are realizing that governments are there to govern, they're there to act in the interests of their people, not to be subservient to global capitalism and to the wishes of international finance. So I think what we've got now is a real sort of, you know, a sense of where do we go from here? There is people power, as we heard in your news report. People feel that the political parties do not represent him. So I think we're reaching a kind of crisis in that neoliberalism idea, which came to prominence in 1980 and has survived, obviously, for over three decades. But I think its days are numbered.
All right. Paul Sheldon Foote, Professor of Accounting, is joining us now. Live via satellite from Irvine, California. Paul Sheldon Foote, thanks so much for being with us. We were speaking, of course, of what the March for the Alternative has been about in the UK and whether those alternatives are feasible or not. Well, those who are protesting say billions have been spent on bailing out indebted banks, but that hasn't worked. Has that been any help at all? Because we've also seen it take place in the US where you are.
Well, as your previous speaker noted, the basic problem is that the political parties that get money from the power brokers do not represent the people. That's true in America, where 70% of Americans opposed the war in Afghanistan. It's true in England. These new budget proposals are very carefully crafted as to who's benefiting and who isn't. Of course, pensioners, for example, in England are not benefiting. They're on a fixed amount, and they will be hurt by inflation. Those people who are able to make superior international investments to overcome inflation are fine, but for the most people, they're going to be hurt. So again and again, no matter, we could go down a long list of the issues in the budget, but those budgets generally benefit the small interest groups who fund the parties.
Right, I'd like to go back to Ian Williams now on the line from New York. Ian, with the protests that we're seeing, though, taking place in London, do you think that this wave of protests that has just started and the extent that we're seeing in London, this is going to in any way affect the strategy that has been adopted by the government there?
Well, I sincerely hope so. I mean, remember that for many of us, it was a sort of a relief when the students started protesting last year, and it showed that worms can turn. We, you know, people have, we've begun to wonder whether there's any vertebrae left in the West. And then we had the protests in Wisconsin in the United States, which were echoed across the country. And now we have this with the trade union movement in Britain joining in. And we have serious signs that there can be a sort of a comprehensive coalition of the providers of services, the consumers of services, and the citizens who have a different vision for the state, an old-fashioned social democratic version of the state's role, which is to help the poor and the weak and to assist others rather than a government that just takes taxes and fights wars, which is basically what the neoliberal view of the government is. And it's interesting that right across the Western world, in Britain, like in the US states, governments are giving away tax breaks to very rich people and then claiming that they don't have enough money. You know, that's not really surprising. They've given the money away. And then they then say that ordinary working people have to pay the price for their giveaways.
Okay, so Ian, I'll just stop you there.
They were a crisis.
I'll just stop you there because we're going to go now live to London. Our correspondent Hassan Ghani is with us at the protest taking place there in central London. So I'll just cross over to him. Hassan, what have you been seeing? Are the protests still continuing there?
Well, we're on the south side of Piccadilly Circus now, and there is a line of police here who've formed a barricade to stop the protesters from getting through. They're actually pushing forward now as we speak. Can you look at them? They're pushing the protesters forward. The protesters are trying to get down south to go towards the Parliament area. We've already seen some clashes in another section of Piccadilly Circus. You can see it's getting quite nasty now as the police make their way forward. They did tell us they were going to use kettling tactics, which is where they contain and trap the protesters. That seems to be what's happening now from what I can gather. And as you can see, we're moving backwards. There are young students here who are being pushed back as well. Of course, earlier on, we saw the other side where missile bits of wood and flares even were being thrown at the police. And the police have also been using what I would say are aggressive tactics. We're moving backwards as I speak because of that. It seems that they want to push them back into Piccadilly Circus, trap them in there, and then process them as they have done previously. I'll just let you see what's happening right now. I'll just get out of the way so you can see the kind of violence place.
You're drunk, Nick!
I do apologize for the swearing, but obviously things are getting quite tense here. The police seem to have, for the moment, seem to have stabilized. They wanted to push people back further. And the crowd is chanting, "Your job's next." Because, of course, it's not just the health service and the educational sector that are suffering. It's the police themselves that are having their budgets cut. And we know that nearly 30,000 police officers will lose their jobs because of the government cuts that are going to be implemented from next week onwards.
All right, Hassan Ghani, our correspondent, speaking to us there. As you could see, among those protesters who are facing the police force there in central London, he said he was in Piccadilly Circus. That's, of course, has been the scene of clashes between protesters and police forces in central London. I'd like to go back to Paul Sheldon Foote now, joining us live from Avine. Paul, what do you think the situation will look like with the austerity measures now in place and with the government saying that so far this protest has not and will not change the strategy? What will things look like with the austerity measures in place?
Well, they're wrong. We saw the Prime Minister of Portugal last week resign over a similar issue. The Canadians have voted no confidence in their Conservative Party leader. Will be election in May. There's no way that these protesters will go away in England. They can pretend all they want.
And Phil Rees in London, do you think that with the news that we were getting of students in Trafalgar Square planning a sit-in, they were describing it, in their words, of another Tahrir Square, very much inspired by what happened in Egypt and across the Arab world? What will happen if there is a prolonged sit-in in Trafalgar Square? How do you think the government is going to respond?
Well, I remember 20 years ago when there were riots against a form of housing tax called the poll tax. And those riots led directly to the fall of the Thatcher government. So these things do have a power. And can I tell you, I was in Tunis about a month ago, and I was speaking to some young Tunisian protesters who said they watched the student demonstrations in London in December and they were inspired by those. And now you've got the people out today inspired by what's been happening in the Middle East. So you've got a new youth movement that uses Facebook, uses technology, that organizes it and are challenging the political institutions that are controlled by interest groups, by rich money, by lobbyists and all those which are denying them a voice. And now they're finding a voice. And I think all these movements are linked.
And speaking of movements, Phil is just telling us the inspiration taken from the Middle East. Paul Sheldon Foote, do you think that we will see from now on similar protests take place, maybe in America, maybe in other European streets? Of course, we have seen protests in European streets, but taking on this extent, even leading to prolonged sit-ins, the way that we've been seeing take place in the Middle East, what's your prediction?
Absolutely. We still have outstanding in the Eurozone whether Germany and others are willing to maintain the stabilization process. That can fall apart. We have in this country even Democrats calling for the impeachment of Obama. It's amazing that the small number of protesters in Libya brought about the bombing by the West of Libya. You have far more protesters in London today than you ever had in Libya. Who's going to bomb the West for our outrageous governments?
And I'd like to put this last question to Phil Rees. Phil, do you think that with the situation that the coalition government in London is facing, will David Cameron and Nick Clegg come up with any kind of alternative, not exactly in the terms that the people and the protesters have been asking, but at least something that would for a while appease the protesters or encourage them to go back home?
Well, maybe not immediately, but I think that the level of protest will only increase, and there will become a point where the level of civil disobedience will be such that it'll spin out of control. And I think at that point, yes, the government will have to and will be forced to make concessions. So, you know, I don't think it'll happen right away, but I think that what this is showing is the huge democratic deficit. Nobody voted for these policies. The coalition was not an elected coalition based on any of these policies. They are deeply, deeply unpopular, and there will be a limit where civil disobedience will force them to change their hand.
Phil Rees, journalist and author, joining us there live from London. A big thank you as well to Professor Paul Sheldon Foote with California State University, live in Avine, California. And earlier, of course, we were speaking to Ken Livingston, former mayor of London, and Ian Williams, a senior analyst with Foreign Policy in Focus in New York. Thanks very much for staying on this special news analysis program. From me, Homa Lezgi, and our team here in Tehran, it's goodbye.